Okay, so we'll start. So we have these two chapters remaining. Chapter 23, the core of the Gita's meaning. Very interesting. Shivinda is not using the word core of the Gita's teaching. Core of the Gita's meaning. What is Sri Krishna trying to tell us through all these chapters? And the second is, as we know, the message of the Gita. So we'll go straight away, and first thing that Sri Aurobindo clarifies for us is that when we pick up an ancient doctrine, we must understand that time moves forward. So if we should not remain fixed to everything that is there. Things evolve and new things come in the course of evolutionary process. So we have to keep that in mind when we read a scripture like the Gita. It is given at a point of time in a certain background and context. At the same time, he says, there is much in the Gita which continues to be relevant. So that's the beauty of the Gita. For example, people were doing physical yajna at one point of time in the age of the Vedas. But now we don't do that. I mean, people do that. Those who want to do, there is no nothing stopping them. But then in the Gita, Sri Krishna has already changed it to an inner yajna. And when Sri Aurobindo was asked about it, who has written so much on the Vedas, he said, well, its importance at that point of time, we have to look at it just as that. We need not do that process now that we need to put ghee and all these things. We don't need to do that because now Sri Krishna has revealed a completely new sense of the yajna. So same way, the very first thing that he tells us on page 562, the human mind moves always forward, alters its viewpoint and enlarges its thought substance, and the effect of these changes is to render past systems of thinking obsolete, or when they are preserved, to extend, to modify, and subtly or visibly to alter their value. This applies to everything. At one place in 1957, one of the conversations of the mother, she explains that why the ashram life is no more now confined to the geographical area. It's a very interesting conversation. She says, now there are people all over the world who have been included, those who have the call. They're in her writings, because many people still hold on like a very closed place. So then she even goes on to say it was necessary if the ashram life had to become viable. These are her words. You have to grow, you have to evolve. You can't stay stuck with a past system. Systems are always temporary things. What is important is the core, the essence. So that's what, this is the core. So there is much in the Gita which at the core is still valuable. And that's what he is trying to tell us. For that means that whatever may have been the limitations or the obsolescences of the form of its thought, the truth of substance, the truth of living vision and experience on which its system was built is still sound and retains a permanent validity and significance. So we can see there are religions which are stuck in the past form, past formula. Now they had their validity at some point of time. But if you continue today, you continue to say, no, I have to sit on the road and suddenly I have to invoke God, this is dangerous because you will be destroyed because the giant wave of time is moving forward. And we are living in an age when you have to discover the divine everywhere and in everything. You are compelled to do that. I remember going to Badrinath once. And in Badrinath, it was very strange. They have a proper tea stall with not the shrine, but they have a tea stall with chips and all available. And they have written there, very advertised, the world's highest tea stall. Now, point is, that well, you can't say that I'll go to Badrinath and sit for meditation and realize God. You better realize everywhere, because man is being compelled to really discover the divine within himself. So this is the basic thing, that evolution has its own way of carrying us forward. The Gita is a book that has worn extraordinarily well, and it is almost as fresh and still in its real substance, quite as new. Because always renewable in experience as when it first appeared in or was written into the frame of the Mahabharata. So it's so beautiful, because if you actually see the Gita, except initially, and there too, we can see that, you know, Duryodhana is describing about the army. And the crisis of Arjuna is a crisis we all face. And the entire process from book 2 onwards till book 18 is an inner process. So it's not based on an external activity, external way. So it's all about an inner journey, and that makes it so wonderful and relevant. At the same time, Sri Aurobindo clarifies a few lines below. Its influence is not merely philosophic or academic, but immediate and living, an influence both for thought and action. And its ideas are actually at work as a powerful shaping factor in the revival and renewal of a nation and a culture. So very few people, maybe some have read it, but Sri Aurobindo writes in Bande Mataram, one of the places, that the Gita should be declared as a national book. And I think very recently either a debate has started or they want to do it. It's a national book. It's like you need to be aware what the Gita is. It is the book which has saved India. And he even goes on to say that it saved Bharat and established, if you see that whole battle after which you had a single entity at that point of time as Aryavart. So its significance. At the same time, he also cautions us, it has even been said recently by a great voice that all we need of spiritual truth for the spiritual life is to be found in the Gita. Now, Sri Aurobindo cautions us, it would be to encourage the superstition of the book to take too literally that utterance. He reminds us, the truth of the spirit is infinite and cannot be circumscribed in that manner. Because people asked him that everything is there in the Gita. He says, no, the entire teaching is not there in the Gita. But Sri Aurobindo always said that the Gita and the Vedanta gives a very nice bedrock for the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. So what is not there in the Gita? He says Divine Mother is not there in the Gita to start with. There is a passing mention of her as Paraprakriti. And all that is said is Paraprakriti Jiva Bhuta, the Jiva, that the one what we truly are, which develops into the psychic being, the central being, comes out of the energy of the Divine Mother. So we are all invariably linked with her. And that's why he says that when you recognize the Divine Mother, that means you are initiated into this yoga, the mother's sentence is there. How do we know that you have initiated into this yoga? She says, when I say I have initiated someone into the yoga, it means I have revealed myself to the person. There is no logic to it, but you spontaneously know she is the Divine Mother. End of the story. So this is how, because we are born from parts of her power. So it's not there in the Gita. Second, what is not there is the transformation of the instruments. It's evidently not there in the Gita, because that was not the purpose. Not that Sri Krishna didn't know it, but the time was not ripe. He had to come back as Sri Aurobindo to reveal that final truth. And again, the Gita knocks at the gates of the supermind, but does not fully enter into it. It speaks of the divine supernature or spiritual nature, or Sri Krishna says my nature. And it speaks of the lower nature of ignorance in which we live. But can that nature be embodied by human beings? The Gita doesn't take up that question. Which is what Sri Aurobindo takes up, that yes, even human beings not only can but are meant eventually to embody the divine supernature. So he says that to say that everything is there is a bit of a superstition, but there is much that is very useful. And if we read even in the Life Divine till the last chapter, even when he's describing the Gnostic being, he brings in the element of the Gita. So it can really be a wonderful preparation. Okay. So there, again he cautions us on page 563 that there are two ways we tend to understand or misunderstand the teaching. It's a spiritual teaching. not an ethical teaching, not a moral teaching, not a social teaching. But we tend to put it like that. So he makes it clear, the central interest of the Gita's philosophy and yoga is its attempt, the idea with which it sets out, continues and closes. We are on page 563, the paragraph begins, to reconcile and even effect a kind of unity between the inner spiritual truth in its most absolute and integral realization and the outer actualities of man's life and action. Now, inner truth not just as self-realization, but all its integrality, the totality of the divine, and the outer truth in every sphere of action. Not only when we sit in meditation or when we are doing puja, but in all life's activities. And that's what we see Shobindu takes on from there and takes it further. So, here he says that normally people say that, accept it, but what they actually mean by that is a kind of compromise. So, even if we read some of the great teachings of great teachers, they advocate do action, but do it as a kind of a sattvic action. Do good to people, so they normally will hold free ration, free food, langars, free medicine. They think that this is what is the action, divine action which the Gita is advocating. The problem there is this action can be a means for freeing you, but more likely it is likely to flatter the ego. But that's not what Gita is saying very clearly, because Gita is telling in modern times, Arjun, pick up the gun, fire it. Now, this is very different from feeding the poor. So humanitarianism, all this, Gita is not preaching that. But there is a tendency to say, yes, yes, we must be engaged in action as the Gita says. So what does it say? A compromise between the two is common enough, but that can never be final and satisfactory solution. Compromise is also, okay, he says, continue doing your duty. At the same time, you should remember God within. So spend some time with God and continue doing your duties, whatever it be, for earning money, looking after family, maybe in a sattvic spirit. The second is the ethical solution. An ethical rendering of spirituality is also common and has its value as a law of conduct. But that is a mental solution which does not amount to a complete practical reconciliation. And this is where the Gita actually begins. The Gita's beginning is that the ethical solution is not being worked out. Arjun is ready to fight, but he feels ethically I am doing something wrong. How can I really shoot at my own family members, at my grandparents, at my teacher? How can I do it? So there is an ethical dilemma. Arjun is already an ethical man, but here his ethics fails him. So Gita comes in where both these solutions and the ethical solution, they all fail. So that's what he says in the end of this page, last 7-8 lines from below. A spiritualized ethics insists on ahimsa. Straight away, Shrivindo is taking the problem. On non-injuring and non-killing as the highest law of spiritual conduct. Ahimsa parmo dharma. That's how it is described. The battle, if it is to be fought out at all, must be fought on the spiritual plane and by some kind of non-resistance or refusal of participation, or only by soul resistance. And if this does not succeed on the external plane, if the force of injustice conquers, the individual will still have preserved his virtue and vindicated by his example the highest ideal. What he's saying is that, well, you don't participate in gross action, brutal action. Inwardly, you should have non-injury and you pray, seek that something should happen. If it happens, very nice. If it doesn't happen, as an individual, you are still free. Your hands are clean. That's what the Gita is. People draw that conclusion. But in real life battle, real combat, a follower of the yoga or of divine should not enter into. Very strange and interesting that in the Second World War, Sri Aurobindo had asked some of the disciples and their children to join the that time RAF, Royal Air Force. And one of them was a very close disciple who was a lawyer, advocate, who used to come every Sunday for the evening talks, Durai Swami Iyer. So his son, one of the son, became a fighter pilot. He died actually in the battle. His body was buried in France. And it's very recently, few years back, I'm forgetting how many years, that there was some kind of recognition, exchange, and his body, they said, you can take these parts. Parts means they would be just bones. And take these and take it back. So the family had gone. I had met the family when they had come to the ashram. So I had a moment to really talk to them. So he encouraged them, even though death is imminent. And that's, we can understand the sacrifice during war. And so he says on page 564, the Gita rejects none of these things in their place, for it insists on the performance of the social duty, the following of the dharma for the man who has to take his share in the common action, accepts ahimsa as part of the highest spiritual ethical ideal, and recognizes the ascetic renunciation as a way of spiritual salvation. It's not entering into whether this is greater or that is greater. He says, okay, everything has its place. But it takes us to the next level, which is not found before the Gita. And yet, it goes boldly beyond all these conflicting positions. Because supposing I follow the ethical ideal of ahimsa, so what do I do if I am called upon to fight a physical combat in times of a real crisis? What should I do? So, and such situations come in the ashram. Ashram itself was attacked, as we all know, by the local political goons in the name of, you know, because they felt that the ashram is against local Tamils and it's against Christians. So they incited both groups. There was nothing of that kind. And instead of clarifying, it was obviously a means to instigate, and ashram was attacked, departments were attacked. There were people who wanted to go out and combat, because this is, by that time already there were people who were being trained under Pranabdha, but mother held them for 8 hours because Kali had become very active. And she said, hold on, because otherwise Kali doesn't distinguish between this side or that side. She will, if there is falsehood in you, you are gone. So after 8 hours, she allowed. And one of them, we all know, Togada, he, Bhagajatin's grandson, or son, grandson. So he went out to fight, and he felt as if Durga had come over him. Single-handedly, he fought against all those hooligans with all those stones, chased them away. And at the end, of course, he got hit. He fell in the Nala. He was unconscious, taken to Jipma, recovered. If you see him, I mean, now he's no more, but I had a number of talks with him. You can't imagine that this man would have done it. He's quite lean and thin. He doesn't even look like a fiery person, but moved from the core that I must resist. And he was allowed to go, and he did what he did. I mean, mother did through him what, and she says that, you know, Durga had actually come over him, and the mother allowed that process. So there are situations that, okay, I want to practice non-violence. What do you do in such a situation? So that also, Gita goes boldly beyond all these things. And why? Because what we are seeking is a complete spiritual life lived in union with the infinite, consonant with the highest self, expressive of the perfect Godhead. So in perfect Godhead, war is included as part of the whole thing. In the perfect Godhead, there is nothing which is excluded. Even in Durga's image, if you see, one of the weapons of Durga is given by Yama. The Pash of Yama is with her. So all these Godheads come together. And that's what we have. This teaching has always been instinctively known in India, till, as I said, nobody has done more harm to India than Gandhiji and all his followers. Luckily now times are changing and people are waking up. But the existence of man is a triple web. Last three lines. A thing mysteriously physical, vital, mental and spiritual at once. And he knows not what are the true relations of these things, which the real reality of his life and his nature, wither the attraction of his destiny and wear the spear of his perfection. So he says, but when you act, you must be aware of all these strands. It's not like under ego you go with a vital desire to get recognition, with ambition for fame and name. So he's reminding us that there are many strands which have come together. First you must entangle them. Find the right law, the right means, and then you should act, even if it involves an action which is a very challenging action. So there are many standards of dharmas, there are many ways of life, laws of life, very simple. One of the stories is of two very beautiful stories actually. One of them is our Ravindraji. So Ravindraji came from Arya Samaj and he was a pakka vegetarian. And he was given egg service. Now, of course, today we can say egg is vegetarian, but I have also grown up in a family where egg was considered non-vegetarian. Not only egg, even onion and garlic was part of non-vegetarian. I mean, you're not supposed to eat it. So he was given egg. So when he would give in the beginning, it was like as if the egg will fall, because touching the egg was for him like blasphemy. So someone asked him that, why are you doing it? Why don't you tell the mother I can't? He said, no, no, no. She has given me this work. It's meant for my progress. I have to learn to obey her. And of course, we know the famous story of Rishabh Chandji, Jain, who was given the task of furniture department, and there were bed bugs. He had to kill the bed bugs. That was his first assignment. Chit from the mother. Kill the bed bugs. So before that assignment, he had written a letter of gratitude to the mother and Sri Aurobindo. But when the assignment came, he kept that letter and wrote to Sri Aurobindo. Perhaps the mother doesn't know about the Indian ethos, and we are not supposed to kill, we are Jains. Sri Aurobindo said, whatever work the mother gives you is meant for your progress. Take it with that attitude. Period. End. So basically, there are conflicting standards and dharmas which the mind creates, erects, and each has its validity and utility at a point of time. But the highest dharma, when we go to the Gita itself says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. So if you take dharma as the standard with which I should govern my life, then the highest is to go beyond all these standards and do things as the divine command. There is a very sweet story of Champaklalji when mother was very ill once. And Champaklalji told her mother, please take chicken soup. He has heard somewhere. So mother says, what you are saying? Chicken soup? No, I'll not take chicken soup. So Champaklalji says, mother, if I was a chicken, I would love to be put in your food. Then she smiled and she took a sip. Because if I was a chicken, I would have loved to meet this destiny. And then she smiled. So we have to understand that all these ideas and ideals have their attraction, and they all have their place. But there is something still greater. This is the first thing he reminds us. And then on page 567, okay, so Sri Aurobindo speaks of a kind of spirituality, 7-8 lines below. This then the mind attempts to know, enter. So the mind tries to glimpse the divine, and invariably the gulf is so big. And the simple example is, imagine an animal trying to understand man. Imagine a dog. He's living all the time. Can he ever understand human being by any stretch? He cannot, because his consciousness is a dog's consciousness. He may try to imitate, and he will imitate very well. He can go to that extent, he can be trained that Tommy do that and he'll do that. Tommy write this and he will even pick up the letters. But Tommy doesn't understand anything like AI, that what it is doing and why it is doing. So the divine does not want us to become Tommy's. Or well, his Tommy, becoming his Tommy is wonderful. But the Tommy must be a conscious Tommy. He must know what the master wants. So that's why he says that normally when people turn to spiritual life, they cannot connect. And when we look at the world, then very difficult for the unchaste mind to understand why is the divine doing what he is doing. For example, the Gita itself, Why the Kurukshetra? If Krishna is God, why this? There are people who have raised these questions. If God is there, why am I suffering? Why there is so much pain and struggle? So it's very convenient for them, because like the Tommy doesn't understand the master. So to take this attitude, well, there is something called as divine, but it has nothing to do with this world. It is name panchavayo na, na this, na that. Chidanandarupam shivaham shivaham. Because it's convenient. He has nothing to do with this world. And we can turn to him, worship him, maybe pray to him. Whether he'll intervene or not, we don't know. In Arya Samaj, very strictly, they don't even believe that divine can intervene. You cannot pray, puja is there. But there is something called as higher consciousness. That's how many Upanishadic people speak about the self, which has nothing to do with all this. So this is one solution, very comfortable, convenient, where we have passed the, taken away the buck from the divine, said we are responsible for what's happening in our life through the law of karma. Whoever made us, whoever inspired us, anyways, it's at the end, it's all an illusion. Now Shivindu challenges this. He says, as if man was consulted when the creation was being made. And he says that if there is a God, he takes the full and absolute responsibility of his creation. That's how he puts in Savitri, one who has made this world is ever its Lord. He works through our sins, our sorrows and tears. He works through our hard breath of battle and toil. Our errors are his steps upon the way. So if there is the divine reality, you can't absolve, he cannot absolve himself that, well, I'm sorry, well, come back. That's how the many Upanishadic sages say. So he says, page 567, Sri Aurobindo, that this then, the mind attempts to know, enter, touch and seize wholly, to approach it or become it, to arrive at some kind of unity or lose itself in a complete identity with that mystery, ashcharyam. So mind can glimpse something of that kind. The difficulty is that this spirit in its purity seems nothing yet farther than the mental absolutes from the actualities of life, something not translatable by mind into its own terms, much less into those of life and action. This is the difficulty. It's like the same dog observing a man. So he may say, okay, he has legs like me, but something called hands which I don't have, though I can do something like that. He has a mouth, he eats. Now imagine if the person goes to watch a movie or a music concert. The dog doesn't have any clue. So it just says there is no connection. This is ashcharyam, this God is doing in his own world, whatever he is doing. Nothing to do with us. I have my own life and I can just be faithful to my master, bark at every stranger who comes, ask everybody's pass when they are entering the ashram. That's it, because that's my understanding, no? So that's how one develops that, well, mechanically. People had refused a piece of bread to the mother. When mother had asked a disciple to get bread from bakery, the person said, sorry, it's 5 o'clock. So it's already 5:30. No, not now, but it's 5:30 and the bakery is closed. So the person said, mother has asked it. It doesn't matter. I am following mother's orders. The law is greater than the Lord. So he said, what do you do? Say, okay, you get a chit from mother. Mother recounts this incident. She writes a chit. Send some bread. Imagine. So, well, this is how we have this problem, because this life and its processes do not divine suddenly on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Even Arjun has a problem that, why are you asking me to this ghora karmam? Why are you asking me to kill and slay when you are saying knowledge is highest, when you are talking about bhakti, nishkam karma, why are you doing it? And then he reveals to him his Vishwarupa, that you are not the doer, I am the doer. Look here, I am slain them. You have any problems? He says, now I have no problem. Tell me what I have to do, I am ready to lift. That's how the whole the Gita is taking us. So therefore we have the intransigent absolutist of the spirit who reject the mental and condemn the material being and yearn after a pure spiritual existence, happily purchased by the dissolution of all that we are in life and mind in nirvana. And Shobhita uses a very wonderful word for that. The rest of spiritual effort is for these fanatics of the absolute. A mental preparation or a compromise, a spiritualizing of life and mind as much as possible. So he says this is the understanding of spiritual life so far. And this is popularized by cult and ceremony and image, things which are outward in nature. Now on page 568 he says, it is here that the Gita intervenes with the restatement of the truth of the spirit, of the self, of God and of the world and nature. First time ever. See, you don't see it in Upanishads. That's why Upanishads leave this gap. That, okay, there is the self which is untouched, unmoved. Beautiful words, lovely. Suryo yatha sarva lokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushay bahya dosha. Words are very uplifting, that as the sun shines above, untouched by material things. And yet because of the sun, everything is there. So it leaves you with that you know, there is a truth eternal, truth supernal, truth which is beyond. But what is its connection with my personality? Is there some connect? Or is my personality only creating doors through heart, through mind, you can enter and that's it. Role of personality is over. Gita for the first time speaks of the divine personality of the Purushottama. This is something very, very beautiful. And this is what we see in the Bhagavat, repeatedly brought to the forefront. That, well, there is a divine personality and this personality has its thought, but it is a divine mind. We have a human mind. There is divine love, we have a human love. There is divine ananda, we have pleasure and pain. There is a divine existence, we have human existence. From there comes the possibility, can this be transmuted into that? So while many apologists feel that, well, that's the divine has been made in human image, it's not true. It's the other way around. That's how even Shruti puts it, sa purusha evascha. Man has been made in the image of God and he has to fulfill that in all his fullness. So this is what the Gita brings for the first time, first time, first time, first time in bold relief. In the Vedas, in the Purush Sukta, you mention it, but it remains like a, you know, like an image. When you read the Purush Sukta, from different parts this creation comes. Purusha is there and he just lends himself to the creation. He's not actively intervening. So you don't really connect with that Purusha. He still becomes the unknowable. But the Gita brings in as the Purushottama who is intervening, even taking a human birth, even assuming a human personality. And everything human, man mana bhav mad bhakta madhya jima namaskuru, everything in human nature can be uplifted. Our human mind can be transmuted into something like the divine knowledge, divine mind. Our human heart can become full of the divine love. Our human life can become full of the divine delight, full of divine force. And it doesn't talk about the body because Krishna almost goes there and says, no, wait. I have to come back as Sri Aurobindo. So he says, Arjun will get totally jinxed. His purpose stops. Look here, you are apparently holding the bow and arrow. Do your job, I will shoot. So till then it stops. So Gita knocks at the door of the supermind but stops here. So then comes that. So whom is the Gita calling? On page 568 toward the end, its call is to the individual who has become capable of a complete spiritual existence. See, that's why at one place Sri Aurobindo says that. Whom is he calling? He says, I have not come here to, you know, he says, I have not come here to establish mutts or sannyasis. I have come here to call the souls of the strong to the leela of Krishna and Kali. Who is the souls of the strong? Who are not shrinking from world. Now, Upanishad hints at it. Isha Upanishad says, what is the sign of the realized man? He says, Yasmin sarvani bhutani atme vabhut vijanata tatra ko moha ka shoka ekattvam anupashyata. Who sees the oneself everywhere? And then he says that he who sees the oneself everywhere, tato na vijagupsate. He doesn't shrink. Oh, I'll not do this, I'll not go there, I'll not. Because all is an expression of the divine and disclosure of the divine, distorted, yes. And it can be corrected, should be corrected. But it's everything, the divine is there in everything, everywhere. So this is what the Gita is here to remind us. Its call is to the individual who has become capable of a complete spiritual existence. not a cut-off spiritual existence, becoming a sannyasi and away from life. But not all are ready. Therefore, we will see in the Gita many layers. So he says, but for the rest of the race, it prescribes only a gradual advance. So it also speaks about tamogun, rajogun, sattogun. It speaks about loksangrahaarth, why he is doing the action. But there is the soul of the strong. In the Gita, it is Arjun who is ready to surrender, who has both ready in the lower hemisphere and he is ready to enter into the higher hemisphere. That's what Sri Aurobindo says, the double perfection. So he is ready for that. He is not running away from life into the divine arms to find solace. He is ready to fight the great battle of life. But not all are ready for this, so it gives something for everyone. So what are the messages? So on page 569, we'll see it gives series of two or three messages. First, page 569, the Gita's message to the mind that follows after the vital and material life. Now there are people who are just enjoying life. You tell them that, look here, you know, you can become instrument of the divine. So he'll get into his head and he'll say, I am divine instrument. And he will continue doing all kinds of stupidity under the name that I am doing divine instrumentality. So Gita cautions, if you are still leading a vital material life, first master it by the mind. So that's how we see Jnana Yoga, where Buddhi and Vivek must step in. That's why Arjun is confused. Why are you telling me confusing things? Conflicting things. So for the man who is completely in the physical vital existence, Gita is not saying Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. That will be, he will say, oh very good, I can do anything. I can drink, smoke, enjoy, because Sri Krishna has said, abandon all dharmas and take refuge in me alone. This happened to one of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples, Girish Bose. So he said, what I have to do for the yoga? He said, nothing, whatever you do, remember me and do it. He said, okay, are you sure? He says, yes. He was a man who would drink, he had all the vices. So after 2-3 days, he says, this is very difficult. He says, why? You can't do. He says, the moment I think of you, I can't think like drinking. I can't go to the brothel. It's so difficult. Why are you asking me to do this? He says, because they are completely jarring. And Gita is also, he's not saying, Sri Krishna is not saying, do anything and Sarva Dharman Parityaja. So that is at the grand culmination. And Sri Krishna cautions, don't give this teaching to the uninitiate. He himself says, because if you talk to those who are not ready, then it can create, as there is a nice word in Hindi, earth ka anarth. But it has something for everyone. So for the man leading a vital and material life is that all life is indeed a manifestation of the universal power in the individual, a derivation from the self, a ray from the divine. But actually it figures the self and the divine veiled in a disguising maya. And to pursue the lower life for its own sake is to persist in a stumbling path and to enthrone our nature's obscure ignorance and not at all to find the true truth and complete law of existence. So you have to say, look here, for the vital physical man, there is a veil of ignorance, divine is hidden out there, okay? He is watching over you. So be careful. If you continue this way, you will keep stumbling. No end to this. So first thing is to learn that. What he should do? Take home point. Few lines below. The vital and material man must accept for his government a religious and social and ideal dharma by which, while satisfying desire and interest under right restrictions, he can train and subdue his lower personality. Therefore, we have the Chatur, you know, the four ashramas. That, well, in young age, study, do well, develop qualities, capacity. Then enter into grahastha life. You will have desires. So, but that let those desires be under the dharma. That's how Sri Krishna says, I am also the desire which is consonant with dharma. So, meaning thereby, there are things which are ethically okay. You can do them and you do it. But then this is not the highest. In the four ashramas, then comes the next vanaprastha. Now you become a seeker. And then you have the final stage, moksha sannyas. Yeah, according to the ancient ideals, Shubhendu takes us further. So for each one, it has something to say. So you have to first train and subdue the lower personality and scrupulously attune it to a higher law, both of the personal and the communal life. This is something which one learns in the ashram immediately, and I think in Auroville also, I don't know, but this is the first training. So when I came, I can share my experience with everybody. So you think outside life, you are you. So each one comes with a kind of my personality, my this thing. And if you have something to, you know, talk about, you feel. So first thing, oh, it should be done this way. That should be done this way. So I started, okay, I will clean the photographs and all this. And okay. And then I realized that people are feeling very unhappy about it. So I said, why are they feeling unhappy? They are not doing it. I am ready to do it. I don't want workers to clean the photographs. I'll do it. I'll bring the ladder, climb. I was doing that. But it was only throwing up strange reactions in the heart of people, which I didn't understand. And if somebody would say something, I would feel, I would say my point of view, which I felt was the higher point of view. Then I realized there's a line in Savitri. Before you enter into service of the divine, learn the principle of obedience. You have to learn to be subservient in your ego. Even a sattvic ego has to learn that training. So I said, oh my God, I knew all this but had forgotten, because there was no opportunity. The only person that a man listens to is his wife. And that too, you find ways and means to, you know, parents. So I realized, oh my God, this is something so beautiful. I'm being trained to learn this lesson. So then you go through that process. It's not about a thing being done, this is the correct thing or not. Then I found a thing that what is given to me, I must do according to my best. And rest is not my lookout. Turn your mind away. So that prepared me to have a mastery over a kind of sattvic impulse, and things must be better according to my idea. So this is the training which he says that the vital must undergo. It has to subdue, train and subdue the lower personality and scrupulously attune it to a higher law. That's why you have certain rules and regulations. So these rules, you can say absolutist, how does it matter? In ashram, there are strangely, like no drinking. Now there was a person, Pranabda's brother. He used to drink. He would take Larpo's 4-foot tablets, 1 milligram, because he would have reactions. So he had stopped drinking, and he said, you know, he was talking about his brother. Huh? He doesn't know. Mother is very generous. She has given me money for drinking alcohol. But she used to say, don't drink outside, drink it at home. I said, yes, because mother thought that you are not worth more than this. but this is one of the things that at different levels, she would give different aspects. So everyone, so, but also there is something which goes beyond it. See how the mind has to learn. So Champaklalji, at one point he took a glass of wine. Now people, oh yeah, blasphemy. But this is also true. And I went to US and they offered, he said, yes, he tasted it and took it little, of course not. Now you see, there is a time when you have to train yourself. I will not do it. I'll control all the lower. When you have sat tight over your lower impulses, when you have mastered all this, that's why Sri Aurobindo says it's so difficult to understand his letters to somebody who is following the extreme of things like fasting and all this. I would say, eat more, drink well. Drink well means water and everything else. Eat well, drink well. But to somebody who is indulging in all this, I would say, sit tight over your impulses. You see how Sahanadi, she asked Sri Aurobindo that, you know what, Lord? Eh, I have a urge to take what? You know? She talked about, I think, meat or fish. Lobsters. Very humorously. I want to eat these things. And Sri Aurobindo's reply, eat your desires. Somebody else, he would say, eat more, drink more, because you are following another extreme. So he says, it's so difficult. If you read my letter, pick up from Like people do that. So depending on the stage, things apply. So he's giving us a stage that if you are still caught by these lower impulses, then you have to put them under the mind, train them, use your buddhi, come out of that mess, then only you can talk of something higher. Okay, so what about those who are now living in the mind? The Gita's message to the mind occupied with the pursuit of intellectual, ethical and social standards, all our right and wrong. For the vital man, it's mental standard. No, no, you can't do this. You're not supposed to. But now to the man who is living in the mind, he is living by certain, he is already perfected now. He has gone beyond. And mother said, who is ready for the Superman? She said, this is the person who is ready, who has followed a mental ideal. You can't leap from the vital man to the Superman. If you try, you will go into the ditch. So message to the mind occupied with the pursuit of intellectual, ethical and social standards, which is what Arjun is. The mind that insists on salvation by the observance of established dharmas, the moral law, social duty and function of the solutions of the liberated intelligence, is that this is indeed a very necessary stage. The dharma is indeed to be observed and rightly observed. But I'll go a few lines below, because he says it is not the complete and last truth. So what is the next level? Impersonalize the action of the intelligence and will. Live in the identity of the one self in all. Break out of all ego molds into the impersonal spirit. Now you see, that's what Mirabai had, this dilemma. What I should do, what I should not do. Because her husband is very different and she must follow that by the norms. But she loves Krishna. She can't do according to the family norms. So Tulsidas wrote his famous bhajan. He wrote in Hindi, one of my favorites. So I don't know how many times I may have shared it. So Tulsidas of Ramayana fame wrote her a letter. That letter is now very famous. Jaake priyana ram vaidehi, so chhaadiye koti bairi sam. Jadapi param sanehi. Says those who do not love the Lord, leave them, even if they are very dear to you. And then he gives example, Bali Guru Tejo. If you read Ramayana, it is about ethics. Ramayana is not like Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja. Ramayana is about ethics. But how it distinguishes the ethics? Bali abandons his guru because of something still higher. He has promised to the Vamana avatar that you ask and I shall give. So Shukracharya says, don't do this, he is fooling you. He said, doesn't matter. So Bali Guru Tejo, Vibhishan Bandhu, Vibhishan has abandoned his brother for the greater good. Vibhishan Bandhu Bharat Mahatari. Bharat abandons his mother. He never spoke to her until Rama comes back and says, see, don't do this. See, I am myself going and talking to her. But he always felt cross. He doesn't do that because he always had a grouse with her that you sent Rama away to throne me. It is very unjust. Now you see, there were two standards. One is listen to the mother, be obedient. He could have easily justified that it's the divine will, like many times we do that. Divine wants me to occupy the throne, what is there? But he knew ethically it is wrong. He is a developed mental man. So he says, no, I will not do. But since Rama goes, he governs the kingdom, but outside, he came out of Ayodhya, he entered the forest, he lived in that forest through which Rama had passed, he kept the throne there, on the throne he kept the footwear of Rama. A very touching story. He takes the footwear of Rama when he says, I am going to go. He says, give me your footwear. Rama gives him, he takes it on the head, comes back, puts it on the throne. He says, okay, I will govern the kingdom because this is your command. But I'll govern it as a servant. What a beautiful ideal. And they all try to call him. He says, nothing doing. So Shatrughan governs the kingdom for all those years. So Bharat Mahatari. So this is the second. You enter into something higher. But then there are those who have entered into an impersonality. And then what is to be done after this? Because okay, you have the experience of the oneself. You are freed from the sting of lower nature, from desires, from mental standards. But you need to navigate life. How are you going to navigate life? You are not governed by any of the moral ethical standard. Does it mean you will become immoral and unethical? No. But something still more difficult and greater. So third is page 570. The Gita's message to those absolutist seekers of the infinite who carry impersonality to an exclusive extreme, entertain an intolerant passion for the extinction of life and action, and would have as the one ultimate aim and ideal an endeavor to cease from all individual being in the pure silence of the ineffable spirit, is that this is indeed one path of journey and entry into the infinite. But the most difficult, the ideal of inaction, a dangerous thing. That's what he explains in the sannyasi and the yogi. That one is like climbing the mountain by holding with your own hand. The other is being carried by the divine. So he says that between the two, yogi is higher. Sri Krishna says that those who try. But then one may say, okay, still this may be higher. How does it matter? So there he will clarify further. So it is a dangerous thing to hold by percept or example before the world. That's what we did. The great mistake that India did. See, yesterday, Bengal election. Can you imagine? A land where Shurabindu, Swami Vivekananda, all these people have been born. It never had its... Well, I want to talk about politics. But it always had parties which were against these great ones. They may sometimes have paid a lip service to get some votes, but this is how it was. Because we had the famous Gandhiji's saying in Noakhali, when Hindus were being massacred and they wanted to fight back. So he said, no, 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 you can't do that. He went on strike, which he was very good at doing. And he apparently restrained the Hindus from fighting back. It is just that divinely inspired one man by the name of Gopal Patha. Gopal, see the name. Who felt inspired by Durga. Who prevented Kolkata from entering into... it would have been taken over into Bangladesh. He prevented. He suddenly felt inspired and alone gathered everyone and fought. Obviously, divinely inspired. And in one day, he changed the whole process. Reversed it, whole process. So, if you keep this ideal... It's dangerous. You are setting up to start with a wrong ideal. Many people today, sannyasi, they come to ashram and ask, where are the sadhaks? Sometimes they ask, I said, what are you looking for? He said, no sadhaks. I said, what do you mean? Dress code. Then I sometimes say, there are some people who wear only white. I said, you meet just for fun. You see the pure sadhaks. Where will I find that? You go and try. For the joy of it. They have this idea that sadhak must wear a certain dress, must eat a certain kind of food, must be like this. Sadhak can't speak English. He must know only Sanskrit. Sadhak must quote the Gita at every step. This is such a mental idea that even now if you see a sannyasi in ochre robes, you feel low. Shobindu says... that there is only one Vivekananda who justified sannyas. And there could have been few like him. But for the majority, it is nothing else but an easy way out. So you see, it's a dangerous example. And though true, yet not the integral knowledge. He says it is incomplete. Okay, you can take this extreme if you want. But it is incomplete. So what is the complete? The supreme, the all-conscious self, the Godhead, the infinite, is not solely a spiritual existence, remote and ineffable. He is here in the universe, at once hidden and expressed through man and the gods and through all beings and in all that is. There is a beautiful meditation of Sri Aurobindo given in Ishtavashya Upanishad. It says, lift your eyes towards the sun and see that he is burning in the sun, billions of light years away. Look at the Himalayas. It is he who has planted it. Look at the net of the stars. Of course, in who he says, in the luminous net of the stars he's caught. He's blooming in the flowers. He's in everywhere. This in the beauty of woman, in the strength of a man, in the thought which is climbing up toward the divine, in heart which is expressing the beauty of love, selfless love. You will have a glimpse of the divine. The Gita speaks about it. It, because it says about Sharo Bhav. It doesn't condemn it as illusion. It says Shara. Even in this mutable world, divine is there. Then Akshara, Brahma. Beyond it is the Akshara. But beyond Shara and Akshara is the Purushottama. So that's how it completes something for the first time. I must say thanks to Krishna. Of course, now Sri Aurobindo is there, but for a long time before Sri Aurobindo, what road people would have taken if Sri Krishna wouldn't have come? India would have been totally gone into destruction. Because already there was all kinds of influences. Soon thereafter, in fact, Arjuna would have withdrawn, talking of philosophy. The Duryodhana and all would have been very happy. Thank God, see, nice guy. Okay, you become a sannyasi. We'll give you alms time to time. And what would have happened, we cannot imagine. Sri Krishna saved Bharat. And then, of course, Sri Aurobindo now. So, this supreme, the self-conscious self. Okay. It is by raising to an integral as well as to a highest union with him, all the activities of the intelligence, the heart, my thoughts, that's how mother says, the intelligence of my mind, the life of my life, the love in my heart, that's how we should become. See, the key to transformation is coming. The heart, the will, the life that man can solve at once, his inner riddle of self and God, and the outer problem of his active human existence. Made godlike, we could not have imagined before Sri Krishna that man can be made godlike, and that's what he writes in Savitri. In his human measure, we must cast ourselves. As he has become human, we must become like the divine. Godlike, God becoming. He can enjoy the infinite breadth of his supreme spiritual consciousness that is reached through works no less than through love and knowledge. And finally, last two lines, the highest message is first for those who have the strength to follow after it. It's not for the chicken-hearted who just want to sit quietly in a corner and meditate. Nothing wrong with it. It'll take you to some touch of the highest. But for the man on the battlefield, for the man in everyday life, and that's why you see both Ashram and Auroville is, everything is here. You can't say only when I go to Matri Mandir and meditate I am. There is solar kitchen, there is garden, there is also inter fights also take place. Divine is giving us a miniature experience, even a mini Kurukshetras, because real Kurukshetra will be dangerous. Okay, mini Kurukshetra also you can have growth through the battle of life. So he says, for the strong, there are people who run away, they can't handle this. They find difficult. They feel, because my mental ideal has not turned out to be true, they run away. They think Auroville has collapsed. They even write books. Okay, for you it has collapsed, fine. Carry on. But it is, if you really look at it, those who can stand on the truth of their purpose are those who will stand. That's how hour of God, Sri Aurobindo says. The hour is a whirlwind and a tempest. So that's what he's saying. For whom this message, and it applies to Sri Aurobindo's yoga. The master men, the great spirits, the God knowers, God doers, God lovers, who can live in God and for God and do their work joyfully for him in the world. What a liberating thing it is. Not do his work, okay, what to do now? I have come to Auroville, phas gaya hun. No, divine work, do it happily. What a powerful thing it is. It's a tonic to the soul. So he says, do his work joyfully for him in the world, wherever. A divine work uplifted above the restless darkness of the human mind and the false limitations of the ego. The sign that we are really working for the divine mother, here, ashram, anywhere, is that you will always carry a joy and peace in your heart. Whatever it may happen, outside things will happen. Outside is always like waves rising, falling. You'll carry a joy in your heart, because as far as you are concerned, your business is serving the mother in whatever way. At the same time, and here we get a gleam of a larger promise which may even extend to the hope. See, Sri Krishna hints but doesn't reveal its truth. So what is it? hope of a collective turn towards perfection. How does he give the hint? Lok Sangrahart. He says, look here, I am also working, I am free. There is nothing in this world I need to do, yet I am working. You know why I am working? He just says, Lok Sangrahart, to carry the march of civilization forward. He doesn't go further, but Mother gives the collective yoga. It is first time that we have a collective yoga. Collective yoga is not a collective sect where people sit together and have a common meditation hall where they are meditating on the same way. Collective yoga means the different ranges of humanity come together, each in its own way, like Sanatan Dharma, in its origin. That's the difference. So he says, hope for man. Why should there not be hope for mankind? For if there is hope for man, why not for mankind? The Gita declared that all can, if they will. See what height Sri Aurobindo takes us. Even to the lowest and sinfulest among men, enter into the path of this yoga. Now we understand why all kinds of people are there in Auroville and Ashram. Including us. Let's not. Sri Aurobindo says in one of the letters, if only sattvic people were called, then the problem of the rajasic and tamasic man would have been left unsolved. So you see, they all have been called, and this is something beautiful. You don't want filtered people. You don't want to keep only those who are like this. See, this is what I keep saying. This is a dangerous thing. It's contrary to what the original plan is. And eventually original plan will impose itself. It'll find a way. Because you can't do that. In the original plan, the mother called all kinds of people for this reason. And why? Because she knows herself and her power. There is a line of Tulsidas. He tells, if I look at you, Lord Rama, my master, I am always full of hope. If I look at myself, I will lose all hope. Rama so swami kusevak moso, dekhi dayanidhi tahi vidiposo. Because you are so gracious, men like me can hope. So that's why she has called all kinds of people. It's part of the original plan. Here he is hinting at that. And if there is a true self-surrender and an absolute unegoistic faith in the indwelling divinity, success is certain in this path. Doesn't matter, you may be the most fallen, sinfulest. But if there is faith and surrender, you will go through. This is the highest word. The decisive turn is needed. There must be an abiding belief in the spirit, a sincere and insistent will to live in the divine, to be in self one with him and in nature, where too we are an eternal portion of his being, one with his greater spiritual nature, God possessed in all our members and godlike. Man mana bhava mad bhakta, God possessed. So these are hints that Sri Krishna leaves. Knowing fully well that, well, I am only giving a hint for coming back as Sri Aurobindo when these hints will be fulfilled. To become full of God. To be full of him in every activity. To be driven by him like a leaf by his breath. Somebody says, what yoga is there? You can only say, I don't know about yoga. I only know mother. Mother, mother, mother. Jai Ma. We'll meet on 20th.